What's up? This is Movies On Up. Fuck. I had my tagline, but I went off of it. Perfect tagline. What's up? This is Movies On Up. Starting over is not for beginners. It's for people who have been podcasting the same opening 5+ years. We are Movies On Up. I am Dave. I almost said I'm Ryan, but I'm not. I am Dave, joined by my co-host Ryan.
I think.
This show is off the rails already, but our tagline for this week, starting over is not for beginners, and I refuse to start over, even though it's this train wreck of an opening. If you know what movie that's from, hit us up, moviesonup@gmail.com, facebook.com/moviesonup, or the Twitter, @moviesonup. Reese Witherspoon goes home again this weekend.
Again.
Yeah. Sweet home again for Reese Witherspoon. So we thought, I think we've done favorite Reese Witherspoon movies already. We just did Toni Collette last week. We got Kristen Dunst next week. So we're not doing the three blondes in a row. So we did favorite movies about going home. This one was fun. It was interesting to me. Like, there's a handful that come to mind right away. And I think, a lot more will come up as I research.
Yeah.
I feel like I missed a bunch.
Oh, for sure. This is one, like, you know, when you deal with a particular actress or a very narrow, like, my favorite 80s slasher films, you know, that's pretty narrow. I like a lot of those, but something like this, I think, is more of a sandbox list where you have this idea and it could be taken multiple ways. Like, there's Home for the Holidays movies, which I think might be like a subgenre of this genre that doesn't actually exist. There's a lot of other ways you could go with it. So, of the five movies I have, they're all kind of different examples of people come home for different reasons.
Yeah.
That catalyst kind of makes the movies different. Some of them are funny. I think most of mine are funny just because. But, I mean, I had a lot of fun trying to kind of come up with some good examples of that would fit this, that wouldn't piss you off for cheating, but might be movies that we haven't talked about.
See, mine, at least two we've talked about.
Oh, yeah.
And the third one, it gets mentioned quite a bit, but they all fit. My also-rans have also been mentioned, so it was like they all have fit into other places as well.
We did a standalone episode on my number one.
I think we did a standalone on my number three.
Uh-oh.
It might be the same.
It might be.
Probably is. Who goes first this episode? Oh, me. So I get to steal it.
You do.
Ryan, take us home with your number five favorite movie about going home.
I suppose my number five being on this list is a bit of a spoiler, but to be honest with you, I don't really feel that bad about spoiling a movie that turns 50 in less than a year. It is Franklin Schaffner's Planet of the Apes from 1968, starring Chuck Heston, Roddy McDowall, and Kim Hunter. Honestly, this movie probably should be number one, because I do like it an awful lot. I probably like it more than any of the other movies on my list, but I put it lower because you don't find out that Charlton Heston has made it back home to Earth, that is, until the very twist end. Now, in 1968, it's a bit like, I think, the Empire Strikes Back twist that I'm about to spoiler another movie that's really old. If you don't know that Darth Vader is Luke's dad, I'm sorry for being the one to have to put that out there for you. But we grow up with it kind of just in the culture, in the zeitgeist, that you see it and it doesn't really impact you. But you got to think back to 1980. Like, oh my God, that's an incredible thing. In 1968, the fact that Heston has crash landed back on Earth so far into the future must have absolutely blown people's minds. And I love me some Rod Serling. The Twilight Zone is one of my favorite things on this planet or any other. And oftentimes, the best of those episodes are known for not exactly having the happiest of the twist endings. And not only do you get a twist ending in Planet of the Apes, but you also get one that sort of makes you rethink the rest of the movie. It also is kind of able to make a statement on nuclear war, which is certainly only on people's minds during the Cold War. And never again, we've never had to worry about being vaporized by a madman. Science fiction flicks like Godzilla and Planet of the Apes, I think, were able to use the most prolific worst case scenario of nuclear war to make their point that nuclear war is in and of itself the worst case scenario. And you can really hear that in Heston's voice at the end when he damns us all to hell. Despite all the warnings, humans persisted in annihilating each other. And in this case, aren't fit any longer to be the dominant species on the planet.
My number five, from 2004, starring Patty Considine, directed by Shane Meadows, written by Patty Considine and Shane Meadows. When we talk about revenge flicks or movies like that, I bring this movie up a lot, and I don't know how much of it's actually on mic or off. It is Dead Man's Shoes. It's a great revenge movie. Patty Considine has been serving the military. He comes back to his hometown, and his mentally disabled brother has been being bullied. So he does what any big brother would do and exacts revenge on him and picks him off one by one. It's a really good revenge movie. It's a slower burn, but it's very methodical. He starts off just terrorizing them, and you think, like, oh, he just wants to make them scared so they won't do it again. And then he just starts killing them slowly. It's really, really good. And Patty Considine is one you don't really think about in these kind of roles. I think of him mostly in comedies, and he pulls it off. Not ex-soldier. He's still technically a soldier. He's just coming home from service. Toby Kebbell is really, really good in it. So it's just Patty Considine and Toby Kebbell being really, really good with Shane Meadows, who's this great. He had this and This Is England back to back, which I thought were two amazing, like, British crime movies that I thought he was going to have this massive movie career. He stuck mostly to making This Is England miniseries in different decades, but really, really good movie about coming home and getting revenge for dudes that wronged your brother.
My number four is a comedy. I guess it's a bit of a dark comedy. It is 2014's This Is Where I Leave You, directed by Sean Levy, starring Jason Bateman, Tina Fey, and Jane Fonda. If this movie were actually the sum of its parts, it would be amazing. In addition to the folks I mentioned, you've got Adam Driver, Connie Britton, Rose Byrne.
Ben Schwartz in this one, too?
Ben Schwartz is in this movie as the good Rabbi Boner, I believe. Jane Fonda, in particular, is really, really great in this movie. It is certainly an ensemble, and they all do have sort of their moments to shine. The problem is, there's really too many characters for a 100-minute movie. You have adult children returning home to mourn the death of their fathers, so there's the grief and the baggage that all the siblings bring to the table, and there is a lot. I think this would have worked way better as like a Netflix series. It's just like a short miniseries, because then you really could have gotten into all the Altman family dynamics as well as all the branches of that tree. As it turned out, each of the four siblings, Bateman, Fay, Corey Stoll, and Adam Driver, I think they all get a little shortchanged, as any of those stories, I guess, could have been the main story in a different movie. And I think that would have also have given these actors more of an opportunity to shine. Fonda steals every scene she's in as the matriarch of this family, bringing her kids together, not necessarily just to mourn their father, but to bring them together, to hash things out with them, and to make an announcement herself. She's really, really funny. And Tina Fey has some great scenes with Timothy Oliphant. That's one of the arcs that I would like to have seen a whole movie on, because I thought those two, and specifically their relationship and where it could have gone had things gone differently, was fantastic. There is some really good stuff in this movie. I think it just suffers from shoving 10 pounds of shit into an 8-pound bag, which is unfortunate, because there's just so many great people in this movie and they're all good in it. Unfortunately, it just feels a little rushed.
With a competent director, a better director, I'm not a big Sean Levy fan. I think this
don't
movie
like the museum movies.
Yeah, or that robot boxing movie. Yeah. This movie had so much potential that it didn't live up to. That cast is great, and to make that cast kind of boring to watch, I think is quite a feat in itself. My number four, I think you would assume it would be higher on my list. I think when you think of movies about going home, I think most people like our age-ish, this would be one of the first ones they think of. From 2004, written and directed and starring Zach Braff, it's Garden State. Whereas Dead Man's Shoes, he was going home because he lived there. Zach Braff's Andrew Largeman has made it a point not to go back home until his mother dies. So he's been estranged from his father and tried to abandon this town, essentially, for nearly a decade. Even though things aren't going great for him where he's at, he just doesn't want to go back. And he ends up going back. And it gets a lot of crap now, I think, but I think it's still really,
it's just
really
hipster
good.
Backlash.
Yeah, it's just hipster, but Natalie Portman is really good in this. Zach Braff, for what he does, is competent in this. And as a director, it's very visually appealing. I think that gets some backlash now just because, yeah, it tries hard at points to be this hipstery thing before the hipstery thing was massive. But it's a really good movie, and it is going back to where you came from to kind of figure out who you are now. And he does go on this journey. Peter Sarsgaard is great in it. And it's just this really interesting story that about going home. And I think it's very similar to my number one, kind of. But we'll talk about that when we get there. That just begrudgingly going home and then realizing, like, it's not as bad as you remember it.
For my number three, a couple weeks ago, we talked about how The Hurt Locker isn't necessarily a war movie. It's a kind of a character study on how war changes a person and if they are able to assimilate back into the civilian society. So in a sense, you're going home to the civilian life and back to the country of your origin. One fella that didn't necessarily assimilate all that well is John J. Rambo. And he is the star of my number three. It is Ted Kochief's First Blood from 1982, starring, of course, Rambo, Sylvester Stallone, Brian Dennehy, and Richard Crenna. After serving in Vietnam, it's pretty clear that Rambo doesn't feel at home in this world anymore. So he heads to Washington to visit an army buddy before butting heads with the local sheriff. All the trauma Rambo brings back with him from Vietnam is stirred up by Sheriff Dennehy, and he simply refers to Jungle Rambo. This is a character that would like to fit back into society, but he knows he can't. And really, the character of Rambo spends the next 25 years trying to decide if he's been able to change enough to try and give life in the States one more try. And only at the very end of 2008's Rambo do we see that maybe he has. So, not that this series is necessarily confused with being a very deep series or like a character study or the psychological profile of this vet, but the way it begins and the way it ends, it begins with a guy trying to kind of find his place back at home and then spending the next 25 years living overseas in some really strange places, killing a lot of people with sharp objects, and then kind of becoming at peace with that. And finally, I think the last shot of Rambo, you see him in Arizona at his family farm that he's kind of bought into. Yeah, I'm ready to give this a try now.
Till the next two movies.
That one got canned. I think there was going to be another Rambo movie, but Sylvester Stallone said he's retiring that character. He's doing the opposite of Harrison Ford.
My number three is the one that might be your number one. I believe we've done an episode on it. It is from 2013. Directed by Edgar Wright, one of my favorites. Written by Simon Pegg and Edgar Wright. It is The World's End.
It's not my number one.
Oh, okay.
This one and Garden State, I knew were going to be on your list, yeah. So I just disqualified
it. Yeah, I didn't know. This one was one of the last ones to come to mind, because I don't think of it as a returning home movie.
But it certainly
even
is.
Even though the whole plot is these friends. Patty Considine, again, Simon Pegg, Nick Frost, Martin Freeman, Eddie Marzan is in there. Rafe Spall shows up. There's a great cast in this. It's Edgar Wright. It's the third of the Cornetto trilogy. I think it's the weakest of the three movies, but I still love it, and it's one of those that I like more and more each viewing. It is just these friends go back to their hometown to complete a pub crawl that they did 20 years ago, and that's pretty much it. Just a bunch of friends drinking beer.
That's all this movie
is. And then the alien invasion and the end of the world. So it's absolutely about going home, and you have Simon Pegg, who really isn't any different 20 years later, and you have the other friends who really have no interest in going back. So it's a nice dynamic there where you have one who has lived for it for this long, looking forward to it, and then the rest almost against their will just going along with it. It's so good, and it's the least funny of the three, I think, but it's still great. It's very visual, which is what Edgar Wright does. It's a great movie. I love Edgar Wright. I love Simon Pegg. I love Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg writing together. Just Edgar Wright as a writer, I love. He does so much little stuff that pays off if you're paying attention. And I love it. That's present here. I love this movie.
My number two, I will admit, with a certain amount of hubris, I was very pleased with myself for coming up with. And it'll become very obvious that, oh, of course, this movie fits. But it's not one you would immediately think of, or at least one that I didn't think of. It took me a while of playing with the idea of somebody going back home, that sort of real world idea of home. But we kind of have the opposite of that in 1991's Hook, directed by Steven Spielberg, starring Robin Williams, Dustin Hoffman, and Julia Roberts. It's an adult Peter Pan heading back home to Neverland to save his kids. So, of course, this is a coming home movie. But not only does Peter do it in returning to Neverland, but he also has to convince his son Jack to do the same, to leave Neverland to come back home. Granted, the movie's not perfect, but when everything is a remake or an adaptation nowadays, I think I like this movie now more than I did at the time looking back on it, because it is kind of a fresh take on Peter Pan. We've seen Pan movies recently.
What was that one with the...
I think it was Pan, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was really bad.
Yeah, like they just suck.
Hugh Jackman was in it.
And they whitewashed Tiger Lily and it pissed everybody off.
Although the live action Peter Pan from like 04, 05 with Jeremy Sumpter, really good.
But, you know, we've had however many like reimaginations of Peter Pan and they're all kind of the same. This isn't the origin story of Peter Pan. This is just like, all right, well, what happens if the guy who had Peter Pan syndrome, the kid that never grows up, grows up, starts a family, and forgets he's Peter Pan? Go. I think that's such a cool way to approach a character that we always see the same way. And if you were going to pick a person to be a man-child, in 91, you couldn't really do any better than Robin Williams. I mean, that's the dude. Fantastic in that role. Dustin Hoffman was a great Captain Hook.
Like
Bob Hoskins is Smee. This is a really,
Dustin
really
Hoffman
good cast.
Basically was Robin Williams playing Captain Hook. Like, mm-hmm. He brought that over-the-top, almost cartoonishness that you don't expect from Dustin Hoffman, that you expect from Robin Williams. And Robin Williams, compared to that, was kind of the straight man.
But for the first half of the movie,
yeah.
Absolutely.
But it worked.
Yeah.
I love Hoffman in this movie. He's so good as Captain Hook.
And Williams is great as Peter, just kind of like the wet blanket. And then when he does kind of embrace who he is or who he was, he's great as Peter Pan, too. I mean, he was kind of playing two roles in this movie, and I think he carried them both off wonderfully.
This movie, it's one of those that I think people remember as being bad because it wasn't as good as people thought. But I think when you go back and look at it, it's not as bad as you remember. It's not a terrible movie.
No, I guess I don't get all the hate. I don't recall anybody hating it when it came out. I think it's like revisionist hate, and I'm not sure why.
Yeah, Lolly Garden State, like that.
Yeah, I guess, but I'm not sure hipsters hate Hook.
I mean, Braff and Spielberg, eh.
Braff, Rufio, they both have bad hair.
My number two is a good story about you grow up on a farm, you go off to college, you experience city life. Sometimes you come out a little bit differently, and you're this city girl now that is kind of afraid to face your farm family because you're not the same. So why not take a best friend home with you for Thanksgiving in 1993's Son-in-Law, starring Carla Gugino and Pauly Shore? This one didn't come to mind right away because it's a Pauly Shore movie.
Right.
And he's not the
he
one
not
going home.
Home.
No. He's not the one going home. It's a fish out of water story, but it's still a coming home movie because Carla Gugino, it's still technically her home because she's just at school. So this is where she's from. And, you know, she grew up on the farm in a really small town where everybody knows everybody. You have Tiffany Amber Thiessen, who hasn't left, and, like, that's her friend. And you have her boyfriend who's still there waiting on her. She's already scared to go back because she's let city life kind of take over and she's not really interested in that. And then you bring Pauly Shore, who is... I like Pauly Shore.
At his weaseliest.
I love this movie. Like, I don't like Pauly Shore movies generally. This movie is great. In the Army Now, Jury Duty, Biodome, all are terrible. Encino Man, I guess, has its moments. This is a legit good movie. This is him doing what he does, but making it work.
The best possible use for Pauly Shore.
Absolutely. You get to feel it, too. Like, he's not just this loud, boisterous just for the sake of it. That's just who he is, and there's heart to it. It's and Carla Gugino is, I love her. She's amazing.
With a side of, what year was this?
93.
With a side of 93 Kelly Kapowski, you could do worse.
Yeah, I love this movie. It's not a guilty pleasure. It's not like, oh, I like this Pauly Shore movie. I legit love this movie. I will watch it every time it's on, and I will go to bat that it's not just a good Pauly Shore movie. It's a good movie. I love it.
You may be in the batter's box by yourself on that one.
Wesley's got my back.
Okay, fair enough. My number one is a comedy. It's a great comedy. This is the first movie that comes to mind when I think of trying to go home. It's a movie that we did an episode on, I think it was last November-ish. It's Planes, Trains, and Automobiles from 1987.
Okay. It's about getting home. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're going home. This is about the trip.
Yeah.
It's not so much about what happens when they get there. That's at the very end. But this is about the journey. It's about them going home. Yeah. Directed by John Hughes, starring those guys trying to get home, Steve Martin and John Candy. Whether you're talking about road trip movies or movies about going home, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles is the first one that I think comes to mind for good reason. At its core, it's a buddy comedy road trip movie with the entire plot revolving around this odd couple of Candy and Martin trying to get home to Chicago for Thanksgiving. I think we just did this because it was about Thanksgiving.
It was Thanksgiving episode.
Right. Yeah. So that, I mean, that was the only thing special about why we picked to do this movie then. I don't want to talk a ton about the movie. Like, if you want to know about Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, see my explanation for not talking about Krampus last week. Listen to our standalone episode. You're going to find it in November of 2016, or you can just search Planes, Trains, and Automobiles in the search bar at moviesonup.com, and that'll come up.
November 24th, 2015.
There you go.
You weren't even on this episode.
2015, I wasn't.
No, me really? And Mike Mann.
Really?
Yeah, your wedding maybe? When did you maybe. Get married?
October? I might have been on vacation. I might have been trying to come home. I know there was a Planes, Trains, and Automobiles episode done. I think I may have like emailed some thoughts or whatever. But yeah, that's going real deep in the archives if it's got Mike Mann in it. Listen to that, and they'll tell you all about the movie. But I do want to talk a bit about John Hughes. The guy's been dead for 8 years, and I'm certain that as much credit as he gets, he doesn't get enough. Of the movies that he wrote, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles is only the 13th highest grossing. But I don't think he wrote a better movie than this. He wrote a lot of A-pluses. This is an A-plus. I would argue that nobody, including your Spielbergs, your George Lucases, whoever you want to put in there, had a larger impact on movies in the 1980s than Hughes. If you start with National Lampoon's Class Reunion, you go through Home Alone, which was 1990, he had 17 writing credits in those 8 years, and most of them are giant hits. You've got all the Griswold movies, 16 Candles, Breakfast Club, Weird Science, Ferris Bueller. Those 8 years, his movies grossed over $940 million at the box office. That's like $55 million on average, and that's in mid-1980s money. If you adjust it for inflation, just the ones I mentioned are over $1.5 billion. John Hughes is the shit. And realistically, whatever list we're doing, a John Hughes movie could probably be number one because he didn't just write buddy comedies. Hell, I guess Home Alone could have maybe fit on this list. The mom's trying to get home. Mrs. McAllister's trying to get home. But whether it's teen comedies, and he had those on lockdown in the 80s. Road trip movies, Planes, Trains sure is, but Vacation, that's a great road trip movie. Maybe Christmas Vacation is a great coming home movie. I don't think you can overemphasize like what he did. He was active pretty close to when he actually passed as far as having movies that were made, writing scripts for stuff. That's a filmography that if you look at, you're going to be surprised. There's going to be stuff that came out in the 2000s. You're like, oh shit, that was a John Hughes movie. Yeah, it was, because the guy just, he wrote hits for 25 years and made some really, really iconic movies.
Just the writing alone and then career opportunities, which I love. My number one, just going through my top five, you know, number five, he was going home just because he was home. Number four, went home against his will for a funeral. Number three, most of them were home against their will. Number two, she was just going home because that was still home. My number one, 10 years later, similar to Garden State, where he does not want to go to his 10-year high school reunion from 1997. It is Gross Point Blank, written by John Cusack and a bunch of his friends, starring John Cusack, Alan Arkin, Minnie Driver, Dan Aykroyd, Joan Cusack, Hank Azaria, Jeremy Piven. Michael Cudlitz shows up in there. I love this movie. And the reason I put this number one, not just because I like it more than any of the other movies probably, but as much as I love this movie, I don't feel like we've talked about it in 5+ years. I saw this like 4 times in the theaters because I was a senior when it came out, and I loved it. I adored this movie. It was funny. It was Cusack-y, and it was crime-driven. Like, it was about a hitman and Dan Aykroyd trying to start a hitman union, which I thought was a great concept. Like, that's a really good driving point. And I really like this movie. And you have him going home. I feel like the stuff with Minnie Driver was a little rushed and not real believable, but she's really good in it. I really like her in it. Everybody's good in it. Even the Pivs. He's enjoyable in it. The action is fun. The final battle, the fight scene, like, there's a little, it has its flaws, but it's fun. I mean, it's a John Cusack movie. It's the kid from Say Anything.
If he grew up to be a hitman.
Yeah, it's the kid from Say Anything grown up making a crime movie, and it's great. It's that same Lloyd Dobler kind of likability that kills people. And I just really like it. And I love that him and his friends...
He ditched the kung fu for Hitman.
Yeah, I love that him and his friends wrote it, and just how they wrote it was... They would just each write scenes and then make them work together. So I thought that was really unique because there is, tonally, it's kind of all over the place, but brought together well. I think it was 3 or 4 or 5 writers that he wrote with that I thought was cool. And you do get all those different voices that kind of come out. And I really love this movie. And it's weird that as much as I love it, I don't remember talking about it on here before.
I feel like we might have brought it up. It might have made a list somewhere. And I don't know if we did, like, movies. Assassins might have been maybe on there. That would have been a choice that one of us would have made on a movie, a list about assassins. But this was one that, like, also rans are tough because it's not like, okay, I've got a list of John Cusack movies. I'm going to pick my 5 favorite, and there might be like a 6 that is on the list and just didn't make it. I mean, if we just sat and thought about it, I could probably come up. I mean, I'm not going to find a movie I like more than Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, but, you know, I could find 4 other movies that could slot right behind it more so than the movies that I've got on there now. So I don't think I really had a lot of also-rans. I mean, I did discount Garden State, Gross Point Blank, and The World's End, just because thinking about those, I thought, well, there's a good chance. I mean, I know how much you like the Cornetto trilogy, so I wouldn't have been surprised to see that on there. Garden State, you've mentioned, and Gross Point Blank just seemed like that was a Dave choice. And I'm not surprised it's your number one. It's a really good movie. I like it a lot.
For also Rans, like, I kind of stopped. I was happy with my 5.
Right.
I really like my 5.
Yeah, this would have been one, if it was an also ran, it just would have bumped out your number 5 and you wouldn't have mentioned it.
Yeah, so like I had my 5 that I really, really like. Beautiful Girls was close, but I know I've talked about that with the Natalie Portman episode, because you have a little young Natalie Portman who's awesome in this movie. Winter Passing with Zooey Deschanel and Will Ferrell, which I think I talked about if we've ever done a Will Ferrell movie episode, which I don't know if we have, but if we did, I'd bring up that. And then 4 Brothers. How could I not bring that up? Marky Mark. Who cares who else?
Tyrese.
Andre 3000, Tyrese, and Garrett Dillahunt.
Yes.
Chiwetel is the bad guy in that movie. Like, that's them coming home to avenge their mother's death. This is one of those that 2 years from now, if we're still doing this, and another Reese Witherspoon romantic comedy comes out,
where she comes home,
we'll probably think, like, oh, let's do favorite movies about going home. And our list could be completely different.
Except I'll still have Planes, Trains, and Automobiles at number 1.
Yeah. I feel like there's...
Unless they do a sequel, but I don't see that happening.
Because, I mean, there's so many. Like, there's movies about, you know, getting out of jail or coming home from the military. Like, we didn't really address... I mean, Dead Man's Shoes, kind of. But, like,
yeah,
we didn't do any out-of-jail movies.
No.
Like, there's a ton of those, like, that, you know, just off the top of my head, I could probably do a top five of that. So there's this, of all the lists we've done, this is probably one of those where it's like, I could probably do this list five times and come up with five different approaches.
And if
and
we did,
lists.
If we did narrow it down, like, okay, this is, you know, getting out of jail movies. Like, we could have done five of those, or coming back from the military, we could have done five of those.
This is just, or Home for the Holidays.
Right.
I think
yeah.
we've done that before.
I think we did, yeah. And I wouldn't be surprised if this movie was very high on one of our lists, if not both of our lists.
Because Home for the Holidays, I left off. And mm-hmm. Mixed Nuts, I left off, because it's like, I'm pretty sure we did a Thanksgiving episode. Like,
I think we did, yeah. I think we may have done two separate lists on. Yeah. I think I might have cheated. Yeah. Next week, it'll be a lot easier. There is no cheating. It is our favorite Kirsten Dunst movies. She is in Sofia Coppola's The Beguiled, which will be out next week. So that was kind of another one that we thought could be relatively interesting. She's been around and been in some pretty big movies for a number of years, so she would have a filmography that is ripe for the picking. And pick we will next week. We'll pick you out our five favorite Kirsten Dunst movies. But until then,
keep it dunst.